The weather injured me yesterday, Eric. Like, legitimately, no joke, really legitimately injured me. It was, as you are aware, the weather around here was windy, rainy, and cold yesterday. It was also my son's last lacrosse game for the season, so I decided to go and bite the elements. And I was standing there for 2 hours. I'm freezing and I'm all hunched up and I'm like, oh, this sucks, you know, but I stuck it out and I got home. I'm like, ah, I'm so tight. And then about an hour later, my lower back, like, you know, a bulging disc, it bull. I am in so much pain right now, literally from being outside in rainy, cold weather. The
Oh, you're
cold, Eric, the
right.
weather injured me.
Would you say you injured yourself shivering? Is that
I
sort
think
of what
so.
did
Yes,
it?
I yes, this is a shivering injury.
After 1 week off, the Low Rollers podcast is back, refreshed and ready to roll low again. I am Eric Raskin. I am joined by Jeff Edelstein. We are writers for CasinoReports.com, InGame.com, Other.coms, and I'm proud to report that neither one of us has ever accepted a free luxury jet from the government of Qatar. But if we did, you'd better believe we would immediately sell it for $400 million and then blow every penny playing online slots. Jeff, I just want to say, I missed you. Let's never take a week off from the podcast again. I
Yeah,
assume you feel the same way.
1,000%. And I also would 1,000% accept any $400 million gift from anybody at any time. I would sell out every last shred of decency that I have.
Ted
I might do
DiBiase
it for
used to
five
say,
hundred grand.
oh. All right. I was going to say, Ted DiBiase used to say every man has his price, and I think almost every man's price, the $400 million hits that range.
Yes.
500,000. Yeah, sure. Why not?
The older I get, the lower the number goes, is
Right.
what it'll take me to sell out for
Right. How much
completely.
more you need to make it through till
Right.
your final days. Right.
Right. You know, I'd do anything. But yeah, I'm also not refreshed. You speak for yourself on the refresh part,
Okay.
as you may have heard in the cold open there. I'm in massive amounts of pain as I speak here. But listen, we got a fun show for you as always. Some quick interviews today that you did while at the SBC Summit, which we'll be talking about later, featuring ESPN's David Purdom, Captain Jack Andrews, our own Brett Smiley, Joe Brennan. A lot of good stuff in those interviews there. But first, before we get to that, as always, plenty of news to discuss.
Yeah, and there's so much news from the last couple of weeks since we last recorded that we can't possibly cover it all, but we'll cover some of it. And the main story we're going to focus on is the continued jostling for the three soon-to-be awarded New York City area casino licenses. The field is paring down. In recent weeks, the Hudson Bay Company's proposal for Saks Fifth Avenue, withdrawn. The Las Vegas Sands proposal for Nassau Coliseum, withdrawn. And just this Monday, Wynn Resort's proposal in Hudson Yards withdrawn. So we're down to eight. The two existing Racinos, Aqueduct and Empire City, Steve Cohen's Metropolitan Park bid in Queens in partnership with Hard Rock, a Bally's proposal at a former Trump golf course in the Bronx, the Coney on Coney Island, the Caesars and Roc Nation project in Times Square, the Soloviev Group's Freedom Plaza bid on the east side, and the Avenir from Silverstein Properties with Rush Street now involved. And on top of that, additional news this week, the mayor of Yonkers says they should just give the two Racinos their licenses now so they can get started. Otherwise, this process is expected to take until about the end of the year before we know where all the bids are going. Conventional wisdom says the Metropolitan Park bid is the front runner. Jeff, any reason to go against conventional wisdom? And do you have a particular rooting interest here?
Well, I mean, all right. So the two Racinos are that they're like, you know, fait accompli. Is that the
We
is that am I using
that
that? Am I saying
that
that? Did
yes,
I do it
yes.
right?
I picture it in italics as you say it, and
Spoken like a true editor. So yeah, the Cohen bid, that seems to be the front runner. I mean, Cohen seems to be he's one of those dudes that has enough money that probably just gets what he wants in the end anyway. And I guess it makes sense. It would turn, you know. I want to say Shea Stadium. It would turn, you
City
know,
Field.
City Field and environs into a like legitimate, obvious, you know, like a call it whatever you want to call it, but you know, destination. I am and will remain surprised if the Caesars and Jay-Z bid in Times Square doesn't get it. Because to me, I feel like it's a missed opportunity just for like the Times Square experience, like to drop a casino in there as well. I think it would add, I mean, Manhattan doesn't have a casino. Like, on the other hand, like I don't want it there because then I would, every time I go to New York, I'd be half tempted to just stop in.
Right.
Whereas, put it two casinos, I'm in New Jersey. I'm an hour train ride out of Manhattan. There is zero chance I'm ever going to go to Yonkers or Aqueduct or Citi Field to gamble. Like, that's not happening.
Although,
But
if you were at Citi Field to see a Mets game, then you might also gamble, but you
I've
wouldn't
never
go just to gamble.
been. The idea of like having to hustle out there is too much for me.
You're such a fake Mets fan.
I am. No, I the last Mets game I was at was Bobby Jones's one hitter against the Giants in like 2001 or 99 or something. I don't even remember. It was a long time ago. Yeah, I, who needs the hassle? Pick me up, put me in a skybox, and I'll go. But
Okay.
I'm not driving. I'm not sitting amongst the hoi polloi. You could italicize that as well. Yeah, I don't know. I so yeah, I'm lean. I guess the Cohen bid seems to be the front runner. But yeah, I think it's in the end, if they don't give one to Times Square, that Times Square, I think it's a missed opportunity. I just think it would just be fun, honestly, to have a Jay-Z led casino sitting there.
So I sort of have the opposite take on the idea of one in Manhattan and specifically Times Square. I'm just like a little freaked out by the idea of a casino, especially in Times Square. It's a little too Back to the Future 2, 2015 Hill Valley. Although in real life we're currently on the timeline where Biff becomes president of the United States, so I guess this lines up. But really, logically, my feeling against the Manhattan bids is that there are plenty of attractions in Manhattan anyway, and getting people to head out to the other boroughs to go to the casino, those boroughs aren't as heavily trafficked otherwise. This helps turn them into, as you said, a destination. Manhattan doesn't need it in the same way. And also, I guess if Manhattan gets one, I feel like that's probably not great for Aqueduct and Empire City. If you want all three casinos to do well, I don't think you put one of them in Manhattan because everyone's going there, and unless you live near Aqueduct or whatever, you're not going to those ones. I do think that the Yonkers mayor makes some good points about just rushing life. If it's basically a fait accompli that these two sites are going from Racino to Casino, why make them wait? And plus, this way, the remaining six will know for sure that they're all competing for one spot, and the ones who don't really have a chance can just drop out accordingly, and we can whittle this down a little more.
It's I feel like this is, well, it has been going on forever at this point. Looking forward to it ending, I suppose, so we don't have to like cover every last, hiccup that happens here.
Right. Although then we'll start covering
Actual, I mean,
the building of the casinos.
sure.
There'll still be plenty for us to cover without the drama of whatever's going into this bidding.
But yeah, I mean, even, I don't know. I the other part of this, those a couple of Jersey legislators want to say, listen, you put up a casino in Manhattan, we're going to bring this back to the voters to get a casino at the Meadowlands, right? And that makes sense because, like, the truth of the matter is, as I said earlier, there is zero chance anyone from New Jersey is going to go to Aqueduct, Yonkers, or Metropolitan Park to gamble. Just to gamble. You follow what I'm saying? You're going to go to AC, you're going to go to Lehigh, you're going to
You
go to Philly, you're going to go to
can go to
Bensalem,
your phone.
you go to my phone, obviously,
Right,
right?
yeah.
But put it in Manhattan, yeah, and like, all of a sudden it's like, hey, let's go grab dinner, let's see a show. And gamble. I mean, there. You know, it there. There's. You know, it's an extra thing to do out there. So
Right.
I. You know, it that would definitely draw people from New Jersey is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I gotcha. But yeah, the Meadowlands Monmouth Park angle is another interesting one that we'd be covering quite a bit
Sure.
if they really get moving on that. And I wonder if this is going to be the thing that spurs New Jerseyans to vote to allow casinos somewhere other than Atlantic City.
Speaking as a lifelong New Jerseyan, I put those odds about a plus 5,000. There is no way that the populace is going to vote put a casino anywhere else. I mean, it's
Okay,
just
so whatever quotes
we're
you had in
gambled
your
out.
story, you had quotes in your story last week from some legislator who sounded confident that the votes would be there once now if there's a Manhattan casino. No, you're not
I don't
buying
think
it.
so. I'm not
Okay.
buying it.
All right. Two more news items we want to hit on quickly. First, News broken on in-game by Brett Smiley Tuesday night. The canceled CFTC roundtable is back on, sort of. Sources said CFTC Acting Director Carolyn Pham will have a conference call next Thursday with tribal leaders to discuss the CFTC regulating sports prediction markets as a more limited substitute of sorts for the roundtable. Jeff, your thoughts on this smaller, not in-person version of the roundtable?
Well, I don't really have any to much more than like what's happening here. Why are they just, what have the tribes said to them, or what is there some kind of threat overhanging here? I mean, I
Right.
what are the what is the CFTC going to say? This is happening, obviously. We haven't ruled on it. Like, there's not, there, you know, I almost feel like it's there's nothing, no, nothing's going to come out of it,
Right. I
right?
agree completely with that, that this surely purely seems like the CFTC trying to appear interested in what
Lip
the tribal
service.
leaders have to say. Yeah, that just appeasing them, basically.
Right.
But yeah, I'm with you that nothing they say is going to have an impact on anything. Yeah, the CFTC is just going to do whatever it decided already, probably it wants to do. There was talk at SBC about it being a captured agency, which led to a fantastic monologue by Dan Wallach about us living in a captured country. I don't know if you saw that that clip got shared online a little bit, but yeah, it definitely does not feel like the CFTC is going to be swayed by any arguments anyone makes on a conference call.
No, I don't think they will be. And I again, like, it just seems to me like I'm sticking with my prediction from weeks ago that no, nothing will happen. The CFTC will not rule. They're not going to just, and things are just going to continue, and we'll let the courts hash it out. And I think in the end, yeah, I mean, it looks like prediction markets, I mean, are here to stay. I mean, it's certainly seems
At
to be trending
least,
that direction,
or here to stay through
at least for the next.
2028.
Oh,
Yeah,
absolutely.
it's, yeah. All right, one more story. While we were off, Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball declared both Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson eligible for the Hall of Fame, no longer having to serve their lifetime bans from baseball since their lifetimes are over, long over in Shoeless Joe's case. Obviously, Rose got more of the attention here. The ultimate overdone sports talk radio debate for the last 35 years or so. Should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame? That debate now comes to low rollers. Jeff, should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame, or do you even care at this point if he gets into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I could give a shit, but yes, of course he should be. I mean, it feels like, it's easier to become like a member of the conclave than it is, to get into the Hall of Fame. See, I mean, the Hall of Fame for, people, like, you have to remember it's a separate institution, right? And so, like, I don't even understand like why Major League Baseball like has a say in the matter, like, right? So that's
Yeah.
A. B, the Hall of Fame to me should like have like it should be everything, and all the players that like made an impact, So of course Rose should be in there, and of course Shoeless Joe should be in there, and Barry Bonds should be in there, and all, and McGuire. I mean, these guys. You listen, this is the world we live in. We're just whitewashing history. I read somewhere a couple of days ago that like when Hank Aaron, like 19 people didn't vote for Hank Aaron, like 19. So I mean,
Wow.
obviously that was like some kind of like asshole racism going on there, but like. Basically, we're putting like the fate of who gets in the Hall of Fame to a bunch of sports writers for the most part. And I've known a lot of these sports writer baseball types through the years at my own journalism jobs, and they're persnickety. I'll put it to you that way,
Okay, good
you
word.
know. And listen, the Hall of Fame, it should honor the best ball players that played the game. And I don't care what they did outside of it. If I watch them play baseball, they deserve to be in the Hall, and they're good enough, they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I
Right.
mean,
I'm glad you put
this
the
is.
"and they're good enough" because if you watch them play baseball, should not be the bar for who gets into the Hall of Fame.
No, but obviously Pete Rose. I mean,
Right.
how many? He's one of the best ball players of all time. Obviously, one of the most influential ball players of all time. As a result of like the game, like it should be part of
Right.
it. We shouldn't ignore it either.
Right. Right. It don't, in a way, it don't, the fame part of the Hall of Fame, the gambling only increased his fame.
Right.
So,
Yeah. So
yeah.
I'm. He should be in. Shoeless Joe should be in. Give me Bonds. Give me Clemens. It's sinful that they're not in there. It really is.
I'm with you. When we had Pete Rose on the Gamble On podcast in the pre-Edelstein era, easily our most famous, notable podcast guest we had in the whole run, he basically said posthumous induction doesn't do him any good.
Sure.
It's all so stupid. Of course, he should be in the Hall of Fame. Morality should have nothing to do with who's in the Hall of Fame. But at the same time, I care about this particular topic a lot less than I used to. It just doesn't mean as much now that Pete Rose is dead. I'm betting against him getting in the first time he's eligible, which would be 2027 vote for 2028 induction. He needs 12 of 16 votes from the ERA committee.
Yeah,
What are
that
the
ERA
chances
committee,
75% of that committee approves him? That
no chance.
yeah,
They're
I
like
mean.
they're you know you look take I'd like to see the average scorebook of one of those 16 guys. I guarantee you, like the you know it is pristine. You know you know what I'm saying?
Right,
These are
right.
like rule following. You know they're all like I guarantee they're all like Rush fans. You know it's you know the band. You know just
Okay.
precise. These are precise people, I'm telling you. And you know
I'm gonna take under 15 and a half Rush fans on the ERA committee, personally.
I mean, yes, that's a fair bet.
Just said
But
you guarantee they're all Rush fans, so
all
I'm
right.
taking
Well,
the under.
persnickety. I'm sticking with
Okay,
persnickety.
okay,
So
okay.
yeah, no, you're right. Rose has to wait for the next generation. Give me like 2040.
Wow, that's pretty far off. I'll take before 2040, but not in 2028. I haven't looked, but I would think you should be able to bet on this at Kalshi, right? Will Pete Rose get into the Hall of Fame in 2028?
I haven't. It's
If they don't have that market up, that's a big drop ball by them, I'd say.
well, I know there's obvious economic impact, clearly, right? You
Yeah,
know, like people
absolutely.
coming to Cooperstown to see, you know, the bronze Rose, you know, stat. You know, listen, this is economics. It's very economics.
Well said, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right, let's move along now to the interview segment. Four of our favorite past podcast guests, each making cameo appearances. So let's get to it. We're trying something a little different this week in the interview segment. Last week at the SBC Summit Americas conference, I asked four industry insiders the same question, and what you're about to hear are their on-the-spot responses. The question I asked was this: at the outset of the year, sweepstakes casinos were the topic dominating our industry. After a couple of months, prediction markets swooped in and have been by far the hottest topic ever since. So now, as we near the end of the first half of the year, what do you predict will be the topic that dominates the gaming industry over the second half of 2025? And first up here with his answer to that question is ESPN gambling writer David Purdom.
I think that the prediction market story will remain. There's a lot of tentacles still going, court cases and everything, and we'll definitely be still seeing how that plays out in the next part of the next half of the year.
Do you sense that the court battles will be the central focus of it? That we're going to be mostly following the direction it's going in the courts, or we now have Sport Trade and Alex Kane looking to get into it? Will the central topic more be the sports books that we're familiar with looking to sink themselves into prediction markets?
Yeah, I definitely think that they're certainly paying attention to it and open to that angle, the sports books coming in, just becoming exchanges themselves. We just had a panel and heard that that's a lengthy process for them to do that, so that probably would not play itself out in the second half of the year. Something I think that is not being mentioned is where the sports leagues are going to come in. We've heard from Major League Baseball and the NBA, and back last August, the NFL actually filed about this, and I still think that there is a way that these sports leagues eventually maybe cut out the middleman and they work as the broker as they sell tickets like they do. Maybe they sell wedges on their game. And when they do that in an exchange model where everything is kind of matched, there is not really a conflict of interest in terms of having one side or the other win the game. They're just taking a commission off the amount traded on their games. So maybe that's the next thing we see eventually, the sports leagues becoming more vocal about this prediction markets.
And as a member of the gambling media, I don't think any of us saw this coming, that this would be what our jobs would become this year. How do you feel about the fact that so much of what you have to do is keeping up with this particular topic, and obviously you sense that we're going to be continuing to follow this for a while?
Well, we can flash back to 10 years ago in the Daily Fantasy when it came apart, and we're having the same arguments that then as we are now. What's gambling, what's not, what's sports betting, what's not. And, I've always been one that any form of where you are putting up money, risking money, and prediction or predicting the performance of athletes, that's all sports betting to me, whether it's done on an exchange, whether it's done on a fantasy site, a sweepstakes site, or traditional sports book. My sense is that that is all under the same thing. And the other point I would make, these products have been shown to cause gambling disorder, all of them, right? They all have little thing. If you're going to tell me that your product is not gambling and is not betting, yet it is causing gambling addiction, I have a real issue with that. And I think that's why we really need a level playing field where everybody is under the same regulations.
My next interview was with professional gambler and Unabated.com co-founder Captain Jack Andrews.
It's going to be a little bit of a downer, Eric, but if we are faced in the North American market, specifically the U.S. market, with an economic downturn, a macroeconomic downturn, gambling's going to take a hit. I've been in this for over 25 years. I've experienced the dot-com bubble. I've experienced the housing crisis in 2008. And we have seen that gambling is discretionary income, and it takes a hit anytime there is macroeconomic forces that affect people's discretionary income. The difference we have now in 2025 that we didn't have in 2008, that we didn't have in 99, is we have phones and we have apps and we have gambling on our apps and phones. And what we were seeing in the industry in those other downturns was people said, I'm not going to drive to the casino. I'm not going to save the gas. I'm not going to fly to Vegas. I'm not going to spend money on a hotel or dinner and all that. Well, they still wanted to gamble. They wanted to gamble at like $5 tables instead of $25 tables. And I think we're going to see that with gambling online, and whether that be sweepstakes-based casinos, whether that be regulated iCasino in the states that have it, whether that be regulated sports betting, we are going to see people say, I want my money to go further, but I still want to be able to make a bet, because people still want to have a little gamble in them to kind of make up for the money they've lost, right? So I do think we're going to see a downturn in people going to brick-and-mortar casinos, but we're going to see an upswing in apps-based betting, and we're going to see an upswing in people wanting their dollar to go further and not be wasting it with some bad bets along the way.
So dollar going further, does that then translate into operators offering more promos is a possible uptick in the second half of the year?
I think so. That's what we've seen in the past when we've had downturns, is the promotion and the bonus machine starts churning. So people definitely, they want to attract in the customer that might have not deposited in September for the NFL season the way they normally did. So yes, there could be an upswing in deposit bonuses, promotional customer acquisition. I think there's also going to be an upswing in tool sites. You know, and I speak a little bit selfishly on this, is like I run a site that helps bettors make better bets. And as a result, hopefully this is an upswing for our business as they try to stretch their dollar further.
And just the topic that has been on everyone's mind, these prediction markets, do you see that in any way ebbing in the second half of the year, or is that likely to amplify right along with everything else that you're talking about?
No, the engine is revving up on prediction markets, and it's on the tip of everyone's minds, even more so than sweeps betting was a year ago at SBC's conference in May of 2024. There's definite momentum going on here. And for a lot of people, they're like, this is happening. And we need to either figure out a way to deal with it or to deal with it.
Next up here is my colleague at Third Planet Media, InGame.com executive editor, Brett Smiley.
I think what's going to happen is that Mahjong is going to make a huge comeback. No, I'm joking, but maybe your mom would like that.
Yes.
I think we may see something similar to what occurred during COVID, where there's just the economic forces are such that states are in real need of some new revenues, you know, without new taxes. And I mean, I guess that pressure's been there for the past four or five years, but I think it increases with the way the current administration is kind of, you know, inviting the states to take care of themselves. FEMA is not really helping out North Carolina or Arkansas, and it doesn't appear that there'll be much use for any states. But beyond that, you know, if there's something affecting Medicaid and the states are needing to assume more of that responsibility, the point is that I think that provides the impetus for iCasino legalization. Obviously been an impasse there for, I mean, it's been a number of years now since there was a new state to legalize. So Ohio apparently is back on the map. We'll see if that happens. But, you know, maybe it does happen for New York next year. So that'll be my my prediction, that if we extend the window to early 26, summer session will trigger another state, and I don't know, maybe it's a few states.
So you think that obviously we've seen in the past that legalization, that bills actually moving and getting done, tends not to happen as we near the end of the year's calendar, that it's usually most of the states have their legislative windows up through the middle of the year or whatever. So you're saying you think there'll be a lot of discussion about bills and introduction of bills and pre-filing of bills, but that do you think we'll actually see any states legalizing iCasino this year, or it's more a prediction of a certain number for 2026?
I don't think this year. There are a few legislators where the sessions are year-round. I don't know which they are off the top of my head. But yes, the ones that don't, I think will be, you know, pre-filing come November, December. You know, maybe some more time for Nicolgees to work out their model legislation. So I'll say over 1.5 states in 26 to legalize iCasino.
And then just last thing, do you have a prediction on where you think we're headed with this Ohio bill, whether Ohio actually has a chance of legalizing this year, or they're part of the over 1.5 for 2026, you think?
I'm going to include them in next year. I heard you and Jeff on Low Rollers, and I think you guys were one of them priced at one of you guys -300, which
that was Jeff.
I think was overly optimistic. So I'll take the other side there. Just it's tough to pass legislation, in particular, you know, one like iCasino, where there's a lot of sensitivities around addiction and you know, welfare of the citizens. So, but I'll stick with over 1.5. 26, possibly Ohio being one of them.
And finally, I asked the same question about what will attract our focus in the second half of the year to Sports Betting Hall of Famer Joe Brennan Jr., a co-founder of Prime Sportsbook and the co-host of the Prime Suspects podcast.
I think you've had a kind of flood the zone in the way, with between the attention being paid to sweeps and now with prediction markets. Also, if you remember, you had New Jersey, Ohio, governors in both of those states were making noise about doubling the tax rate on sports books. So I think what you're going to see is everybody hit like the big pause button here in a way. And because these things, they do have to kind of get sorted out. Everything's been moving at breakneck speed. I can understand why operators in different lines, sweeps, prediction markets, want to press that way. They want to do that. Certainly the courts have not agreed to step in and slow things down, but I think on a practical basis, everything does need to slow down, because they all have an effect on one another. Obviously, sweeps is driving the consideration in certain state houses on legislation. The states don't think that the sports books are paying their fair share. You have some, frankly, budgetary laziness on the behalf of some governors and lawmakers, where they just thought, hey, I can fill a hole all at once, only to have prediction markets jump on the scene and give a great counter argument to state governments doing that, so that, and it's like, hey, look, why are you punishing the guys who are playing by the rules? This is no time to be doing that. So probably the thing, to bring it all back to your question, is like, right, I think this is a time for the states themselves to really rethink the industry in better terms. We're still running a market based on post-PASPA euphoria the commercials, the market access agreements, the licensing fees, everything is very expensive and I think detrimental to the marketplace. So if anything, I think something, you know, there should be an opportunity now for states, if they want to keep their place here and not get eclipsed by particularly the prediction markets, and it, you know, I think that's their biggest danger, not necessarily sweeps. Sweeps have been around, it's just old wine in a new bottle, right? It's just they're now taking notice of it. But I think prediction markets is the one, and the only way the states can truly combat it on a practical basis is by making states more attractive to do business there. So that's my hope. That's what I'd like to see. I know I've been talking with some lawmakers and regulators. There's a little bit of discussion about that. I don't know. Maybe that's a bit too optimistic. I've always kind of existed at that level, so maybe I'm a little too in the tank to be credible at that. But I think things are probably going to slow down here a bit out of necessity, and we'll see where things go from there. Fourth quarter will be interesting. By the time we get to football season, you got to guess something big will have happened, and probably everything I just said will be moot.
But just as far as states looking at changing some of the rules and regulations, usually changes like that don't just happen with the snap of a finger. Is it more that you would anticipate the topic being just that there's a lot of conversation around making adjustments, or do you think things could actually change that quickly that by the end of the year some states are revamping their rules to be more friendly to sports books?
I think at a minimum the hope would be that this, you know, drive to, you know, double tax rates and things like that, I hope that the pause button's hit there. Right. That's something that you'd really like to see more time and space and consider that. It'd be a great opportunity for the industry to do what it hasn't done a good job of, which is talk with lawmakers about what the real commercials are, what the real economics are of sports betting. Probably the thing that the sports betting industry is most guilty of is selling the industry the commercials based on the handle, the amount of bets being taken in. And so, of course, lawmakers, if they see like, oh, well, you can take in $1 billion a month in bets, lawmakers aren't making this fine decision or fine distinction between like, okay, well, if we take in 1.5 billion in bets, that boils down to what, $15 million in revenue and how much in taxes. And so I think that at a minimum, that's the kind of work that can start to happen. I don't think you see anything necessarily abandoned overnight. I don't think that the states, especially since there's going to be a bigger demand for the states to generate more revenue for themselves, when you see the reduction in money that's going to be coming out of D.C. from the federal government to help the states, more unfunded mandates that they're going to have regarding healthcare, education, things like that. The budgetary bill for state government is not going to get smaller, but at the same time, you don't get anywhere by just saying like, okay, well, this one industry we're going to tax into like near punishment levels, create a disincentive for people to operate, so they just start saying like, hey, we can't operate here. Well, it's too expensive. Why would they continue to do it? And then if you have alternatives like the sweeps guys, like the prediction markets out there, it just makes it that much easier for people to abandon these markets and the states never to get them back. So I think states are probably going to have to become a little more creative in their thinking, a little more agile to think about how do we create that. Because the federal question is not going to go away anytime soon. The sweeps guys, they're going to go until you turn the lights out off or turn right. The lights off on them. States are going to have to get off their ass.
My thanks again to Joe, Brett, Jack, and David. It was good seeing them all and others at SBC in Florida last week, even if it meant 2 days without access to legal online casino or online poker. Longest 2 days of my life, I tell you. Excellent conference, though, as industry conferences go. You, of course, sat this one out, Jeff. And look, you didn't really miss anything life-changing, but I liked this conference a little more than most of them because, first of all, the space was huge, and so it was nice for it not to feel so crowded. Right. But also, the panels were not the same old, same old, in large part because the focus in the industry has changed so much. For years, it was, you know, you've been to one conference, you've been to them all, it's all the same people saying the same things. But here, with sweeps and prediction markets and so much uncertainty about where it's all headed, there were actually new things being said and debated that I hadn't heard a million times before. All that said, the real highlight of the trip was the Third Planet Media team dinner. Adam keeps arranging meals that align with my pescatarian preferences. We went to the Boatyard, which was an unbelievably fancy seafood joint. It was like Blue Point Grill, but a notch, maybe two notches above. Right. And I started with the $25 Old Fashioned, where they poured it tableside and they sprayed it with like a perfume or something. I don't know what was going on, but I started a trend. Before I knew it, half the table was ordering Old Fashions. We got two seafood towers, which I absolutely went to town on. I came home from this trip at my all-time fattest. I've been on a weight loss mission ever since I got home, trying to eat normal portions and cut down on my snacking and exercise daily and all that. But look, when you're eating on the company dime, you pig out. I have no regrets. But anyway, Jeff, you missed a pretty good conference. You missed a great meal, and you missed a forced 2-day online casino detox, which only you know how badly you do or don't need that.
Yeah, I could use it, honestly. I'm a little jealous, but I'm very jealous about the seafood tower. The conference, I could take or leave. Listen, speaking of food, I'd like to wish you today. You know, today is 15-year anniversary of Bitcoin Pizza Day. I don't know if you knew those or not.
I did not know. Wow. Okay.
Yep. Today marks the anniversary of the first commercial transaction of Bitcoin. This guy, Laszlo, I can't pronounce his last name, H-A-N something. We'll just call him Laszlo. He was a Bitcoin miner, and he was a designer, a developer. He was into it. He bought two pizzas with Bitcoin. Cash value of the pizzas were $41 back in 2010, and that was worth 10,000 Bitcoin. This morning, as we record, those 10,000 Bitcoin will be worth $1.1 billion. But we're not done. As a little internet research this morning found out, he spent another 80,000 Bitcoin in the ensuing weeks on pizza. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking like $10 to $15 billion worth of Bitcoin the man spent on pizza. Who knew? The lesson, you never hit the cash out button on your sportsbook bets, I think. I'm not sure. I think a lesson in there. That's a lesson. Listen, the guy's been interviewed a bunch of times over the years, and he seems to be pretty, like, Kool-Aid-da about the whole thing. I don't understand how that's possible. I don't think I'd be able to recover from that. I mean, honest to God, I need, like, 2 days to recover from, like, thinking about placing a $10 bet that I don't place that would have cashed.
Right.
I may be in the wrong business altogether here. Listen, until next week, we are Low Rollers, Small Stakes, and Hot Takes.